Hey, y'all. I'm Casey Bell of the Google Teacher Tribe podcast, a proud member of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to right now. The opinions expressed are those of the individual hosts. Make sure you check out all the other great podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com and get ready because the learning begins in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome back. This is part 2, the conclusion of my interview with Ernest Dempsey, the USA Today best-selling author of the Sean Wyatt Archaeological Thriller Series. Enjoy. Teaching Learning Leading K-12 is excited to be a member of Voice Ed Radio. Voice Ed Radio, your voice is right here.
You are listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, a podcast for educators, helping you help kids achieve their dreams. And now here's Steve with this week's show.
So now, you know, one of the things that your stories are is they're thrillers. They make you want to keep reading. And, you know, it's when you realize that it's 2 a.m, which I just did the other night, a couple nights ago, and you're like, oh crud, man, I gotta go to bed. That's a neat thing. Why a thriller? I've read thrillers before where you're 50 pages in and you're going, okay, is there something thrilling going to happen at some point? No, you don't wait very long before you get our attention. So talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So the first part of that is the first line of the story. Okay. And I see lots of authors make this mistake all the time. And despite all the great information that's out there now and all the education there is for writers, and Stephen King talked about this in his book On Writing, and the first line of your story is your chance to get the reader interested in your book. And so I spend a good amount of time making sure that I craft a great first line. And I sound like a drug dealer when I talk about first lines for books. I'm like, you got to get them hooked on it. You know, you really, it goes into creepy voice, you know, like, yeah, this is going to get them. Then they'll come back for more. But that's truthfully, a great first line is also what I want. So, you know, I try to give readers what they want, and you know, it's what they want is also what I want. We're just people. We're all just people. And so if your first line in a story is clouds rolled across the sky, the sun poked its rays through every now and then, you know, and like the wind rustled through the trees, I understand that the writer's trying to set up, you know, they're trying to establish the setting, and maybe it's an ominous setting, and maybe there's a storm raging, and they're like, it's too late. You lost me already. You didn't make me want to read farther because you described how pretty the flowers were. You know, Dickens, I believe, this is just my opinion, wrote the greatest first line of all time when he said, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times. Well, why is that such a great first line? Because it's a paradox. How is it the best of times and the worst of times? Like, I need more information. So what do? I go to the next sentence. And then I go to the next one and the next one. Now, Dickens didn't write thrillers, but for me, it's the same process. I want to give you a first line that makes you say, wait, why is this happening? Or what? Like, one of my best first lines, I think, was Sean Wyatt was dead, right? And everybody who loves the series was like, no, what? And people who don't know the series, let's say I don't remember which book that was, 12, 13, 14, whatever, but let's say they're new to it and that's the first book they're reading. They're going to wonder, well, who's Sean Wyatt? Why is he dead? How did he die? you're like all these questions, right? And it makes you go to the next sentence, which, and then the next sentence was even, you know, more provoked. Like, he was still breathing, his heart was still beating in his chest, but he knew he was dead. So now, okay, oh, so he's in some kind of trouble. What kind of trouble is he in? And so your first line is your chance to jumpstart the story. Like, you should be starting off at 100 miles an hour, not like easing into it. And I do that with all of my stories, because all of my favorite stories to read do the exact same thing. They jump you right in. And that's how I like it. And that's most of my readers seem to enjoy it. And so that's what I do. And then with pacing, I always want to keep, like, you're not the first person to say that, like, that at 2 a.m. you realized it was 2 a.m. and you'd been you lost track of time. Like, that's, I want people to say, read the last sentence of a chapter and say, oh man, I got it. Okay. Just one more. I just got to find out what happens next. And then that might be a story break where it goes to a different perspective, a different point of view with a different character. And so to find out what happened with that cliffhanger, you actually have to read 2 more chapters. And that second chapter on leaves you with another cliffhanger. And I love stories that do that, because I'm a very slow reader and I like to be motivated to push forward and keep going. And one of my friends, Terry Shaw of Toronto, writes a virtual reality series called The Game is Life. And he is a master at that too. Like, he every single chapter leaves you like hanging by a thread, but there's a rope right in front of you can grab. That rope is the next chapter. Are you going to hold onto the thread, or are you going to grab the rope? You're going to grab the rope, even though it's 3 a.m. So I love stories that do that, to pace that way, that keep you pushing forward and wanting to. And because I love that, I love doing that. I love creating them that way. And so that's how I do that. And then the scenes. So I get a lot of readers tell me how vivid my descriptions are with my books and things, comments in that regard. What's funny about that is that I actually don't do a whole lot of setting descriptions. So one thing that annoys me with writers is that they will put, my daughter's at the door, like, of my office saying, "Dad," so if that's what you hear. But basically the whole thing is that I don't do a lot with settings, because I don't like to read 500 ways to describe a wooden desk. she's cracking me up. Awesome. I like to give some very essential things in the description. So I like to touch the 5 senses, right?
Right.
I'll touch scent, you know, like with smells. I'll touch a little bit with sight, a little bit with feel, a little bit with hearing, a little bit with everything. And that enriches the environment without having to describe a sidewalk 6 different ways. Or a building 100 different ways. And so by doing that, the reader fills in the gaps. The reader's imagination fills in the gaps. In fact, I think it was Tolkien that he never got into like whether a character was black or white or whatever. He just talked about what, you know, were they an elf or a dwarf? But he let the reader imagination fill it in. And so, I like to do that by giving a taste of all the senses and then let the reader's imagination fill in the gaps. And so it always cracks me up when I hear about how is the yelling too loud in the background?
No, it's not. But if you need to go talk
about
it.
No, it's okay. Granny's trying to get a handle on it. It's really kind of funny.
It is.
Wish I need a soundproofed office. So anyway, but It's always funny to me when I get these compliments about how descriptive I am, because I'm really not. I'm setting a base of descriptions and then letting the reader fill in the gaps. And so really they're complimenting themselves, because they're the ones that are really getting all the details into the descriptions.
What have you thought about that? Because I think you make my imagination start really falling into the story, and it's You want to know what's going to happen, and you kind of get a feel for where you are and the thoughts that are there, and it's good stuff. So that's neat. I appreciate you know, sharing that how you do that and why. And you know, one of the things that I want to make sure that I point out is that you've along the way, I guess your audience has shown an interest in some of your other characters, or you've decided to kind of branch out away from Sean. Are these action thrillers also?
Yeah, they are. And I'm going to finish that last question with this really quick, though, if I can backtrack for a second.
Sure.
And then I'll go to
sure.
the new characters. It's like I try to take a Bob Ross approach. So Bob Ross, I love watching the reruns of Bob Ross painting show. And he gets a ton of detail into all of his paintings, but he usually doesn't do a lot of individual tiny strokes. He does lots of broad strokes, and he gets incredible detail in those paintings. So if you're a writer, you can do it the same way. You do it with your words, but it's so that's how I approach it with that sort of stuff. Now, you were asking about the new characters and are they similar adventures? Yes and no. So I tell people all the time, you know, with other authors, I say you need to create great characters that people are going to love, and you need to create lots of them. And because that will open up new story possibilities. And so while I love the treasure hunting and the archaeology and the history and all that stuff, I want to do some other things too. I like spy thrillers. I like, you know, I even like reading like vampire stuff now and then, which I'm not going to do with my little universe of characters, but there's lots of fun, different things you can do. And so one of the things that I'm doing is I took Sean's girlfriend, Adriana, and recruited her to this extrajudicial anti-terrorism unit in the UK. And so she's kind of a butt kicker herself, and everybody wanted me to do something with her. And so I took her and Tommy's girlfriend, June, and I put them in this special agency. And so those little stories come out in between the Sean Wyatt stories now. And then I've got my kids series for, you know, probably, I guess, like fifth grade and up maybe, called the Adventure Guild. And those kids are, they're treasure hunters, and they're, one of them is the son of some famous archaeologists, and I work in the Sean and Tommy universe a little bit there. Like I include Tommy in one of those stories, and there's a lot of crossover. I've got, you know, the kids, Tara and Alex are the research assistants at the lab for IAA, but they've been trained by Sean through the years, and coming possibly at the end of this year, they're going to have their own adventure. Because I've had lots of readers that want that. They tell me, you know, when are the kids going to get their own story? Which they're not kids; they're in their like 20s, early 30s, but that's what they call them. And so they're going to have their own series. And there's all these characters that have been introduced along the way that I can branch off and do fun things with. And so that's kind of the answer to your question, I guess.
No, that's great stuff, because that's what I figured that was kind of in response. And once again, another great device to help you be able to expand your universe, be able to write, come up with ideas of where to go with new storylines and keeping it fresh, I would think.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
That's
for sure.
That's very cool. I love the idea that you do have a kids series, which, you know, listening to you talk about that, the Adventure Guild, that's cool stuff there. Because like you were talking about, I would include in your description earlier about the different stories and the different movies and things like that you watched. You put me back in the, you know, in the 70s watching as a kid. One of the other things that I added, you know, before the 80s when we run into the Goonies and we run into Indiana Jones and all that, Disney had the Wonderful World of Disney that came on Sunday nights, and there were a series of TV movies that they created around a kid who was an adventurer, and he was an inventor and stuff like this. And he always had, they were kind of like Hardy Boy mysteries, but they weren't. They were this kid who he always was creating things out of garbage, you know, out of junk that other people would see as junk, and he'd make these little devices and things like this to help him solve these mysteries or whatever. And, you know, that would be another one of those types of things. That sounds cool, which, you know, having this this children's series.
It's fun. And I'm actually co-writing that with my nephew. People to ask me about my nephew. He's my cousin. He's my cousin's son. So I guess that makes him my third cousin or whatever. But my cousin Chandler, he wanted, his mom approached me two summers ago saying that he loved writing and wanted to be a writer. Would you be willing to spend some time with him? And I was like, sure. So I threw the idea for the Adventure Guild at him last summer, and we started doing some production meetings, and we ended up writing it together, and we've got a nice little process with that in place. He's writing his own superhero books. He's got, I think, two or three of them done already, and one's with the editor right now. They're shorter, like 60-page books, I think. But, I mean, find me a ninth grader that has written 60-page books. I mean, he just turned 16 a couple weeks ago.
Excellent.
But, he's got some great ideas, and I'm really excited for him. And so we published that first Adventure Guild story in January, February, maybe March. I don't remember which month, but yeah, it's really cool. I mean, he's in ninth grade, and he has his name on a book cover, and he's a published author. And I said, congratulations, you just published more books than probably all of your teachers combined that you'll ever have in life. And
very true.
that sounds kind of cocky or whatever, but it's cool. I mean, it is
cool.
I said, and then I cautioned him. I said, no, don't tell your teachers that I said that, and don't, and definitely don't let it go to your head. But
it sounds like a first line to one of the books.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm going that same way. That's awesome. Well, enjoy doing that. That's neat, being able to work with a relative on a project like that, especially with his age. That's what a cool thing. So let me kind of digress from here, and let's talk about the different ways that you have of connecting with your readers, because one of them is a YouTube channel that you have, and it's really cool. I've watched some of your videos, and you talk a little bit about what's coming up, and like, for example, you have this part one and part two videos that just came out for your newest book, The Templar Curse, which we'll talk about in a minute. But tell them a little bit more about what they'll find at the YouTube channel.
Yeah, so the YouTube channel is one of the ways that I interact with readers, and there's what I do is every time I release a new book, I'll put out two new videos that are just little self-interviews with me talking a little bit about the book, why I chose to write that book, different things. I'm very aware I keep saying right now, because in one of my videos, one of the readers made a comment about that. She said, you say too much, and you need my high school speech teacher. And I'm like, yes, my college speech professor would probably be furious at me. But yeah, I love to interact with readers, and I send out, I try to answer all the emails that I get. I read every email that I get. I know that some slip through the cracks and are sitting there from 2 years ago that I never answered, and I feel bad about that, but I try to get to all of them. I'm always behind on them, but YouTube is a great way to interact with people and give them I tell other authors all the time. They're like, do you have any advice for me? And I say, be Disney. And they're like, what do you mean, be Disney? Like, be a billion-dollar company? Well, that would be great. But what I mean by be Disney is you're not a writer. You're a storyteller, okay? So writing is how you convey what happened in this story to a reader. But essentially, there are other ways that you can be a storyteller. You can use video to talk more, to give them a behind-the-scenes look at the story. That's the way I use my YouTube channel. I let people into the green room, right? I let them into the VIP area so they can, you know, it's like they can hang out, you know, like we're all hanging out together for a little while on a video. And I get that from people, readers all the time. They say, I love your videos. It's like I'm in the room with you. And that's what I want. Like, I wish I could be in the room with them. Because I can't fly all over the world and meet everybody at a coffee shop, that's the best way I can do it. And I love that. I love chatting with the readers and giving them a look behind the scenes at some stuff. And that's part of, that's content, right? Like Disney creates content. And sometimes that content is a movie. Sometimes it's TV shows. Sometimes, you know, it's action figures or toys or whatever, or theme parks. But all of that stuff is part of the story. And that's another, you know, that's, YouTube is one of the ways that I do that. My Facebook page is another way where I can answer questions very quickly from readers on my Facebook page, because it's easier to answer stuff on Facebook's app than it is email on my phone. And I'm often like running around doing stuff. And so I engage with people on my Facebook page quite a bit. YouTube is a lot of fun, and it really makes it a lot more personal. And so that's one thing I do. And then another thing that I'm doing going forward, and I talked to Chandler, my cousin, about this, is we're going to start creating physical things that people can have in their office or in their homes or whatever. So it might be collectibles of some kind that relate to stories or characters, because that enriches the experience for the readers. You know, it's I know that I love having, like, in my office here, it's funny because I'm a big Star Wars fan, right? And so in my office here, I have like an X-Wing fighter and the Millennium Falcon and a Star Destroyer and Boba Fett and all this stuff in here. And people, you know, those enhance my experience of those stories. Like, even though I've seen those movies a million times, it's like having the story there with you. And that's really cool to me. And that's something that I haven't seen any authors doing yet, is dipping their toes into that. What? So I'm actually right now I'm learning Fusion 360, which is like an AutoCAD software, and I'm working on designing collectibles and things that I think that readers would like. And I'll definitely be putting stuff out there and taking surveys and things to see what people would want. But it's just one more way that you can enrich the reader experience. And as a writer, you should always be doing that. You should always be looking to enrich the reader experience and make it that much better. And too many authors, you know, they get into, they're in this getting mindset, right? They're worried about getting more sales, making more money. And I tell them, you're looking at it the wrong way. You need to look at it from the perspective of what can you give your reader to make the experience that much better. And if it does, the good news is they'll pay for it, and that's great, you know, for your time and your efforts and whatever. But you have to stop this thinking and like getting what can you get? You know, I give lots of books away for free. Like, there's, depending on where you sign up on my VIP list, you might get book one or book four for free. And people ask me about that. Well, didn't you, but you worked so hard on that. Why would you give it away for free? And I'm like, Disney gives away their TV shows for free. I mean, advertising pays for it, but like the consumer doesn't. You watch Disney Junior, Mickey Mouse Clubhouse. Like, that's, you're watching, you're not paying anything for that. So you should be giving stuff away, and it shouldn't just be stories. You should be engaging with your audience on your YouTube channel or doing stuff like that enriches that reader experience. And I think that's a big point that a lot of people miss out on, not just in the author space, but in lots of business spaces. So.
Oh, that's awesome. That's great advice. I mean, that's neat that you're looking at that to the point of learning the CAD software. We, you know, and I can imagine maybe one of the stones with the writing on it, and just any sort of you know, just any number of things that you could pop up at that you'd discuss, especially with that flair for the history that you like. You could create, you know, in one of your videos you show a piece of sandstone from a work experience you had.
I'm looking at it right now.
And you know, I could see you having maybe not that big a piece of sandstone, but something that fits with one of your stories like that. What a cool thing, because that, you're right, that is, and it melts. I mean, all you got to do is look around my office and you see all my little mementos of this, that, and the other. And some of it, to some people, looks like, what in the world do you have this rock for? Well, look closely at that rock, you know.
I didn't get the idea directly from this, but I just thought of it while you and I were sitting here talking. When I was that professor that was that passed away years ago, was my best friend's mom. She was one of my English professors at Southern, and I was taking an American Lit class from her. And every year, for years and years and years, she and her husband would go up north, and they would go to Walden Pond, and she would take old milk jugs and fill it up with the water from Walden Pond. She would go up there every year and come back with a couple of jugs full.
Wow.
And she kept old medicine bottles, and she would pour a little bit of that water from Walden Pond into these medicine bottles and seal it with hot glue so it would never evaporate and it would be there forever. And, you know, it's not on my desk right now. We just moved, so it's in one of my boxes somewhere. I say we just moved. That was like 3 months ago. But but in that, she writes on there, water from Walden Pond. And if you've ever, you know anything about Walden Pond and, you know, the history of that place and, you know, the famous writer that was there, that is so enriching to have that, like, to have water from that place, you know, that, and you know that, like, that was an inspiration, right? And it connects you to all those stories. And so it's just so cool to be able to do that. And so I don't have water from a place or anything like that, but always be searching for a way to enrich the reader experience, because that spurs interest, it spurs passion, it spurs a love for those stories that, you know, just reading a book doesn't always do.
That's excellent. I wish you well in pursuing that, because that is a cool device there that I think will help connect you even more so and your readers with your characters and your storylines. And let's use that kind of as a segue, because you just released the latest Sean Wyatt story, The Templar Curse. And in here, I also want you, at some point I'm going to get to another question, which is, I understand that you've got, you're starting to have your books available on Audible as well, right?
Yeah, I just signed a deal with Tantor Media. Month ago or so. They're going to produce the first three in the series. And so that's really cool. I have a couple of books in audio, and it's books like 4 and 7, and other writers are like, they look at me with the craziest look, like, why in the world did you do books 4 and 7 in audio? And I said, well, at the time, book 4 was my best book. And then at the time, book 7 was my best book. And I had the money to produce those at those times. So that's what I did. And I, you know, they say, put your best foot forward, right? So that's what I did. In hindsight, it doesn't make a lot of sense, but I'm glad I waited, because Tantor's got some great production teams going, and they've got an amazing narrator. And I think it's John Glockovich is going to be narrating, which is really funny, because I joked, I wish John Malkovich could do it. And then they sent me John Glockovich, and I was like, that is really close.
Very close. Yes. That's awesome.
Yeah. So I'm excited about that. I think Secret of the Stones comes out next month. June 26th is what they're shooting for as a release date for the first one. And then they're going to roll out books 2 and 3 in July and August. So that's a really cool experience on my part. I've never worked with a publishing company like that, especially audio publishing. So
awesome.
That's exciting. But you wanted to know, you mentioned the Templar Curse.
Yeah, share with the readers about Sean's latest adventure that's now available.
Yeah, so that's always tricky, because you don't want to put out spoilers. And I almost do that. Like, I've almost done that a couple of times with other interviews and with reader questions. I've always been very fascinated by the Templars and secret societies in general, and I don't think, you know, they necessarily qualify as a secret society, but they were certainly secretive. And I've read some stories that other people have done, and I've seen movies, and I watched History Channel. I haven't watched the series yet, Nightfall, but I definitely want to check that out. One of my readers said that that's a great series, and so I'll definitely be checking that out soon. But it's just, you know, it's just a great mystery. Like, what, you know, there's all these guys that are fighting for the Christian kingdom or whatever, and all of a sudden the Pope and the King of France execute all of them. I mean, and it was a massive thing that happened in 1303, I think, in Chinon, France, where they were eradicated and only a few managed to escape. It was really, you know, in history, there's been several moments of these stealth takedowns that happened, but this one was a logistical nightmare to figure out where each and every one of these guys was hiding out, because a lot of them were together, but a lot of them were spread out through the city. To hunt them all down and find them all in a day must have taken a lot of planning. But you know, what was it that they wanted? What was it that these people wanted that they had to kill all of these guys that were their staunchest defenders for so long? And, you know, the government cover-up answer would be well, they just were greedy. They wanted their land holdings and their money. The Knights Templar were banking a lot at that point. You know, they had a, you know, vast amount of resources, and so they were just greedy. Well, okay, sure. That maybe that's it. But all the great stories are that they were hiding something. And I took a long time to write a Templar story, because I know a lot of other people have done it, and I've seen, you know, other people's theories and things like that. And I wanted to do it right, and not that they did it wrong, but for me, like, I knew if I did it too soon, it wouldn't be right. I needed to learn more. I needed to study more. And so this one, all my books take hundreds of hours of research. This one took, you know, about the same, maybe a little more than some of the others, because I really wanted to dig in. And there's a lot that it covers. You know, it covers colonial history here in America, and it visits Monticello in Virginia, and it visits George Washington's childhood home. So not his estate, but the actual, like, where he grew up as a child. That a lot of people don't, you know, they don't think about that. It delves into some, you know, the Oak Island mystery, and it gets into a whole lot of historical stuff that, and probably not into the depth that it deserves, but it was a 102,000 word novel, and that's a pretty long novel. So for me, and so, I wasn't going to dig deeper. And really, I tell people the stories are always as long as they need to be, and the story was as long as it needed to be. But I've always been fascinated with the Templars, and I wanted to do it. I just wanted to make sure I got the research and understood things better. And it's exciting. It's a really, when I finished the final words on that novel, I got chills. I mean, that usually happens in the research phase for me, and it certainly did with this one. Like, when I find something that's really creepy and could be true, I get chills from it, and that's happened in every book. This one was the most chills of all. And so I was, you know, I just kind of pumped my fist and was like, yes, that is really cool.
Nice.
And totally plausible. And, so yeah, it's a fun story. It's a fast-paced story. It digs a lot into history that you both know and don't know. And this one has a high body count, because, and I've been dinged in some reviews before about that. Like, there's a lot, great story, too much killing or whatever. But I'm one that loves to see bad guys get their comeuppance, first of all. So. My mom enjoys my stories. She doesn't complain about the violence. She's just happy that there's no sex or profanity in them.
There you go.
And then, just write clean. I tell authors that all the time. Write clean. It doesn't cost you anything. Nobody's going to complain because your character didn't drop an F-bomb right there.
Yeah,
and you're only going to lose people when you do that. Like, it's not going to endear anyone. And, sorry, that's a sidebar.
That's okay. That's a great sidebar, because that is something that is all it it's you show that it does. It's not necessary. Instead, we go forward with this. And by the way, I love the thought. Besides what you just described, with you, there's, it's not necessary for the profanity or the sex or whatever. It's, you also you know, you hit on one of my major topics, which is what I love. I like it when bad guys pay. So
yes, they need to pay, and that's maybe that's the vengeful side of us or whatever. But you know what they do? They need to get their comeuppance. And in this story, Sean and Tommy are taking on an ancient order of assassins that are trying to unravel this Templar curse, this the clues to this thing. And so, you know, these guys are an ancient order of killers. So there's really only one way to deal with them. If you don't, they're just going to keep coming back. And so the body count gets higher than in some of them. But it also, this book takes Sean to a very dark place that he has never gone before introspectively. And it answers a lot of questions that maybe even readers didn't have before. And so, and now it makes them, you know, ask questions. It might make them go back and read earlier books to, oh yeah, I can kind of see that now. And so, this sort of revelation comes about towards the end of the book, The Templar Curse. So,
excellent.
Yeah, it was fun. It was a really cool story to write, and I honestly don't. I know what the next one is or where it takes place and all that, and it's, I'm well underway with it, but I don't know if it's going to top it. So,
awesome.
I might have outdone myself on this one.
Awesome. Well, looking forward to reading it. That's just your description there, and even touching base a little bit with that Oak Island stuff, that really gets you wanting to look into more. And like I said, I like it when bad guys pay. So that's good stuff. Let's as we start to wrap up now, if a listener would like to reach out to you, what would be the best way?
So you can reach out to me through email, if you'd like, at ernie@ernestdempsey.net, or that I am really backed up on emails right now, so that might not be the fastest response. Unless you have a technical question, I try to sift through those quickly to make sure if somebody has trouble getting a book, that they, you know, they don't have trouble with their downloads. Occasionally that happens when I'm giving free books away and they can't download a book. So email's great, or on my Facebook page, you can direct message me through my Facebook page, facebook.com/ErnestDempsey. Those are the two best ways to get in touch with me.
Awesome.
And, Facebook, I interact pretty rapidly on there. So,
excellent. I will. And just to remind everybody, I'll have all these, I'll have links to the different books and to his websites and to the different places you can find Ernie online. And so, that'll all be in my show notes. So one of the things that I want to make sure that I reemphasize is that you do, and you've mentioned this a little bit, they get a bonus for signing up for your email list. And that's a couple of books there, right?
Yeah, you can get, most importantly, you get The Secret of the Stones for free, which is the first book in the series and the one that we were talking about quite a bit earlier on in the show. And that's my overall best-selling book. And in fact, this week, I don't know when the show is going to air, so it'll probably air after this week, I guess, but because you've got a lot of production stuff to do. But this week I'm giving it away for free to everybody without signing up on the email list. So Amazon's doing a special deal this week where the first book's free. And so that's cool. But if you get to it after this week, you can still get it free. Just, you know, visit one of those links there that you're providing in the show notes, and you can get that book totally free. Just enter your email. You'll get like an auto confirmation message, and you confirm your email, and then you'll get another follow-up a couple days later where I ask readers who some of their favorite authors are. And some people are like, I don't like this automated message. And I'm like, well, I wrote the message, and I'm going to read your response, and I'm probably going to respond to your response. So, and a lot of people love that. They love that they get a message like that. And So you'll get that stuff. And if you don't want those emails anymore, and you don't want to get my updates, I send out an update every 2 weeks about the newest projects or upcoming things or stuff that's going on. If you don't want those annoying emails or the launch emails or the video emails, then just unsubscribe. It's free. It's no big deal. You can leave if you want to. The last thing I want to do is annoy anybody. So that's what you get.
That's excellent. Thanks for sharing that. I'll work to get, I'll see what we can do about getting that, that out this week, but that's awesome that Amazon's running that as well. Ernie said that if you miss out on that, you can get that first book through the sign up for the emails. So here are the last two questions. I got a last couple questions for you, but let's go with it this way. If you were given the chance to talk with 100 brand new teachers who haven't started teaching yet, what advice would you give them?
Go into a different profession. So, no, I'm just kidding.
I had to wait there for a second. I'm like, okay, this is a little different.
No, man. I mean, it's a great profession. And it's funny because I was sitting in my office one day when I was working at Dalton High School, and this new counselor came by, and he was becoming a counselor. He was a former English teacher, and this guy and I are still very good friends. He's still a guidance counselor, and he came by and he said, "You're Ernie Dempsey, right?" And I said, "Yep." "Who are you?" And he goes, "I'm Chris Anderson." I said, "Oh, nice to meet you." And I said, "What do you do?" And he said, "Well, I'm going to be a counselor. I'm learning to be a counselor." And I turned my head to him, and I said, "Run far, far away." I had this deadpan look on my face, and he's just meeting me for the first time. And he's like, "Is this guy serious?" And what was great was I just turned my head back to my keyboard and went back to typing because I was entering transcript information.
Nice.
And he kind of just slinked away or whatever. And then I went and tracked him down. I was like, "Dude, I'm just kidding with you." So the advice question for teachers, that's a tricky question, by the way. And I saw that one, and I wasn't sure how I was going to answer it. But it comes back to the earlier question you asked me. In as many ways as you possibly can, within the framework that you're given, try to meet the kids where they are. I understand that in education, people have tried to gamify learning. They've tried to make learning more fun for kids, or they've tried to... Kids see through all of that. They're not stupid. They know that you're trying to get them to play a video game that's going to teach them math, and they don't want to play that video game. Like, you can't do it that way, but you have to meet them where they are and in the framework, in the context that you in which you live in the school system. And so that means sometimes bending your own rules a little bit, or maybe changing the way that you do things, or listening to the kids. Now, 9 times out of 10, they're going to say ridiculous things like, "We want to go to the mall for class today," you know, or they're going to give you the toddler, "We want cupcakes for lunch" answer, right? But 1 out of 10 of those times, there's going to be a priceless nugget that they give you that you can, as a teacher, can take, extrude that into many different directions and use it as a more effective way to educate kids. And so that would be my advice, is try, and as much as possible, try to meet them where they are. And the hard part of that is, like we mentioned earlier, you're in a classroom with 30 kids. That could be 30 different places where they are. And that's hard. But you don't have to do it all in one day. You have 180 days in a school year. You know, you can get 2 or 3 kids, you know, find out where they are on Monday, and find out where 5 or 6 more are on Tuesday, and start to learn more about them as people. And you can start to design more meaningful work, more quality work around those kids. If you can even just take a step in their direction a little bit. And I know that that's hard, and we already ask a lot of teachers, but that would be the advice that I give.
Awesome advice. Awesome. Do you have a teacher in your past who made a difference in your life? And we kind of saw a little bit of this. If you're given a chance to say thank you, who would it be and what would you say?
Well, I've already said thank you to all of them many times, but my favorite teacher would be my history teacher in high school, Gary Pinnell. And I've bumped into him. I bumped into him 3 weeks ago at the grocery store. And again, I told him, thank you so much for helping spur my interest in history, because I was never really that. I was interested in it from, like, you know, we talked about the Goonies and the fiction side and Indiana Jones, but he really got me into reading history and enjoying the details between all the big things that happened in history. And yeah, so I've told Mr. Pinnell many times, and I've told him, you know, I'll tell him again, you know, thank you so much for giving me this gift that is an interest in history. And I told him when I bumped into him at the grocery store a few weeks ago, I said, you know, hundreds of thousands of people have read my books because you gave me and you spurred an interest in history for me. And I said, you have indirectly entertained hundreds of thousands of people all over the planet and all the continents and dozens of countries that you'll never meet. Like, you've indirectly entertained them. Have a good night. He was just like, wow. And neat. His wife was, you know, like, just smiling. But yeah, I mean, so yeah, I would definitely thank Mr. Pinnell again. And I always will every time I see him.
Excellent. So one more question, and we've kind of touched on this just a little bit, but I can't talk to a writer, a successful writer, and not ask, what one piece of advice would you give to aspiring writers?
Yeah, so this one's easy, and I'd say it all the time. Create more content. And the old advice was write more books, okay? And that's true. You do need to write more books. Write stories that, you know, you need to constantly be giving people content. You need to give them your stories. The world needs stories. You know, the world can sometimes be a difficult and a bleak place, and you might think, well, my stories aren't that good, or I'm not that good of a writer. Yes, you are. You are a good writer. Like, if you have a grasp on how to speak the English language, then you can write the English language. So write it and write more of it. And then also give more content in the context of, like, what we talked about earlier, enriching content. Like, get on the video and talk about your story and talk about why you did it. And so I know some people are adverse to getting on camera or whatever, but get over that. You're not really, you're alone. You're in your office, you're talking to your phone. That's what I do. I set my phone on a tripod and I just talk to it. And I sometimes answer reader questions, but give people content. And if the more you give, the more you get back. That's just the way the universe works. You know, you can't constantly be hoping to take. How would it work if you tried to inhale all the time without ever exhaling? Your lungs would explode, right? It doesn't work like that. The universe doesn't work like that. Like, you, there is a give and a receive. And so constantly giving, and don't be afraid to give stuff away for free. Like, I know you worked hard on it, but the cheesemaker in Wisconsin worked hard on that cheese they're giving away for free in the grocery store. Even drug dealers know this. Like, they give away a free sample. Like, if I could write a marketing book, I would call it Drug Dealer Marketing, because drug dealers are the best marketers on the planet. Like, they run extremely good businesses. Are they doing bad things? Yes. But they're running from a pure business perspective. They're really good at what they do. And so as a writer, you need to be willing to give and give and give. And so that means writing lots of stories. It means sharing content in other mediums and that sort of thing. And that's the best advice that I could give.
Awesome advice. And I appreciate you sharing. And Ernie, Ernie, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm loving reading about Sean's adventures. Keep them coming. I'm hooked. Going back to your Give me more, man. And
you need another fix.
Exactly. You have, and the fix is out there. Number 15. You have a gift for creating thrilling stories of adventure. I'm wishing you the best in all that you do. Take care.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is a proud member of the Education Podcast Network. Podcasts for educators. Podcasts by educators. The opinions expressed on Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 are those of the guests and host. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is intended to share ideas, advice, and suggestions for classroom teachers and school administrators. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is produced for educational purposes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll share it with your friends.